Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Touchdown, Detroit Lions!
You're listening to the best of the Lions.
Oh, baby, how beautiful is that?
A weekly mix of 97.1, the Ticket's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Let's talk to Brad Holmes, general manager of the Detroit Lions. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great. Can you ask a general manager who his favorite pick was, or is that like asking a parent who their favorite kid is?
That is probably asking a parent who their favorite kid was. I do love all of them. I'll give you this though. Probably the most the pick that probably was the most questioned, I would say, was Isaac Tesla. I can say that he was my favorite wide receiver in this draft. I'm not saying he was the best wide receiver in the draft, but favorite wide receiver in the draft, yes.
So you traded up for Tate Ratledge, and you traded up, obviously, for Isaac Tesla. What, I mean, did you feel like they were not going to be available? It was only three picks for Tate, but it was almost an entire round for Tesla. Did you feel like they wouldn't be on the board, and that's one where you just said, we got to go get our guy?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And, you know, when you start getting into trade-ups, it is so much more than just, hey, we like this player, we got to go get him. You know, there's a lot of, you know, we talk about needs all the time. And, you know, the teams around the league, the teams that are in front of you, the teams that are behind you, you know, they have needs as well. So sometimes, you know, you really want Tate Ratledge. Yeah, you could stay patient. And, you know, it's a roll of the dice. He could be there. He could not be there. But you got to be aware of the teams behind you that could come up and get him. And then you also, you're looking at the board. And you're looking at how many guards are available, how many teams actually still are looking to fill that need of guard. There's still teams in front of you that are looking to fill the need of guard. So you have to take all those things into account. And then especially if you have that player graded at a certain level. And that's what the case was with Tate. And that was the case with Tesla as well, is that, yes, we love the player, but when you start looking at, okay, we're at 102, and, you know, you have this player, and take away the player, like the specific player, it's just a player graded at a certain level. Maybe it's only two or three of those guys left on the entire board, and you're sitting down there at 102, and you look up, and it's like, okay, we love this player, but also there's probably about eight teams that still – are looking for a wide receiver. And so you got to take all those things into account. But obviously it all starts with, you got to have conviction of the player. But when you think about, you know, past drafts and you look into, oh, well, that's a third-round pick. That's a third-round pick. You guys have heard this before. Not all drafts are the same. And what I mean by that, yeah, not all drafts are the same, but also when you look at the past, let's say past two or three drafts, even including this one, it has not been the same depth, the depth of talent. So this year, last year, before, you don't find an Aleem McNeil in the third round. You don't find Amon-Ra St. Brown in the fourth round. Like, those guys just aren't there as of recent. So we're sitting there at 102. Okay, if we stay here, we're going to be dealing with a different level of player based on our board, not on the 31 other boards, but based on our board. And so you take all that into account.
You mentioned you like the player. You're not a need guy. We know that. But you can kind of create the perfect marriage when you trade up to get a specific guy. We understand that you tried to trade up for an edge player. Can you share what goes into that process and maybe how difficult it's been to get an edge that you guys like? Not just any old edge, but a player that you guys specifically covet.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I think I said before, yeah, you can draft an edge rusher in every single round. That's easy. But the one that fits what we're looking for and hits those criteria, the pool is a lot smaller than what you would think. And so so it just has to line up. And again, if we have a player that's just rated higher, and it happens to line up, right? Like, I'll go back to the corner thing. You know, we went a few years without drafting an outside corner, and then we get Terrion Arnold and it's Rakestraw. And, well, it just lined up that we really love those players, and it happened to fit a position that we're a little thin at. The same way with the defensive tackle with Tyleek. Tyleek, we just had him rated higher than some other players at that, you know, let's call it defensive end position. But we're trying to build a football team. And when you're trying to build a football team, you're trying to get the best player. But it just happened to match up well with we were a little bit thin, you know, at the interior defensive line position as well.
How close were you to pulling the trigger on that trade for the edge to go up? And, I mean, what goes into how far you want to go up and the cost that you're willing to spend to go up and get that position?
It just depends. It just depends on where you're at. Because, you know, when I look at, you know, when you're starting to part ways with future assets specifically, you know, you have to look at it and see, okay, are you at peace with this? Are you at peace with not having that because we're going to get this specific player? But, you know, let's say we made on day two, we made two trade ups. Guys, those were two that were done out of about 30 attempts. You know, that just happened to be the two that we were able to do, but it's so many other different attempts, and it's just hard. And it's hard to sometimes find a partner because teams just don't want to go that far down. Because just like what I was talking about earlier, the further you go down, then the talent pool and the depth on that specific team's board is going to drop as well. So you have to have peace with that. But I mean, I've looked at, you know, I've thought of trading a future too, you know, for, you know, if it's the right player, you know, and if it fits, I mean, but you just have to be at peace with it.
I know you've been asked a ton about edge. Do you understand why people inundate you with the questions? Like, do you think it's a fair?
I don't understand it.
So, I mean, because you've said that the injuries are why you assume you're getting the questions. I think even before Aiden got hurt, people wanted to know about a running mate opposite Aiden just because of the lack of production on the opposite edge. So you don't see that the way that on the outside we see that.
Well, I'm curious, like, you know, you brought up Aiden Hutchinson. Would you say Aiden Hutchinson is an elite edge rusher?
Yeah.
Okay. How many elite edge rushers are in the NFL?
I'd say five or six.
Okay, I think that's fair. And obviously there's 32 teams in the NFL, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually two edge rushers on the field at the same time, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So now you're in, barring injury or anything, now you're talking about 64 players, right? we have one of the five or six, right? Why? How come all of the five or six, how come it's not just one or two when you look at the whole team? Like, how come one team doesn't have two elite ones?
I don't know that the ask is...
Another team that doesn't have two elite ones. Well, we talked about it. It's they're hard to find. They're hard to get. They're hard to acquire. But I have felt like ever since we have acquired Aiden Hutchinson, as great of a player he is, I always felt like the fan base is almost mad. Like, they're mad because we have Aiden Hutchinson. Because now he's so good. Well, why don't you have two of them? And so now it goes in that, but I have been curious.
It's never enough, right? Yeah, that's kind of how it feels.
I've been curious, the teams that have those elite five or six edge rushers in other media markets, I have been curious, okay, we have an elite edge rusher. All we're going to ask is about edge rusher. You know what I mean? Like, and we all know who those players are. When you go to those cities and those media markets and they have an elite edge rusher, all you do is get questions about edge rusher. But you have an elite one. But all you're asking about is, well, how come you don't have another one?
Yeah, I don't know if the ask is...
And then now you get into the, well, are you trying to build a football team or are you trying to just pair in? Yes, like I've said all the time, we would love to have three or four of them. But that's not reality all the time.
Yeah, I would just point out, I don't think people, I mean, we'd all love to have two elite edges. I think people just want more production than, say, you've gotten from the position in 23 and 24. From a sack standpoint, from the second end position, and if that's an area that, yeah, maybe you can't get one of the elite guys, but is there more that could be done? You've said you've tried to trade it up, so I do wonder if some of that is, you do understand where people are coming from on that level.
Well, yeah, if you bring in 24, I mean, at one point we had five injured defensive ends. So that was a little bit of an anomaly, of course. Like, when you have – we got up to five that were injured. And then, well, yeah, we have to find someone to finish out the season. Mm-hmm. We make the trade for Za'Darius, but – and then, you know, obviously we just have been steadily improving the roster year by year. But so I do understand the attrition and the depth component of it. But again, it has to all line up as well. So it's not just, again, you can draft an edge rusher. That's easy. We can do that every single round. We can draft one. Now, does he fit? Does he fit the requirements that we're looking for in a player? Then now that's a whole different story. Because if you draft that edge rusher that's not contributing to the level that we would all like, then what's next? Oh, find another edge rusher, right?
Right.
Find another edge rusher because that one wasn't good enough. Well, we drafted one, right? I thought that's all we needed to. I thought all we needed to do was draft one, right?
Draft a good one, Brad.
That player's
not
performing. Then now, or if the player's not starting, if he's a backup, if he, you know what I mean. So you got to look into all of those things. So I mean, I understand. Yes, you want more production. If you count 2024, where we had just a litany of injuries at that one position among other spots, I can understand that with the recency bias, but we do have we have an elite one, and that's the only one that I kind of don't understand. Is we have an elite one, but all we get asked is edge rusher.
Well, let's talk about that elite one and Aiden Hutchinson, which I don't think anybody's mad, actually, that we do have. We love him, and we want him to be here a long time. What's the sense of urgency? Do you think a deal will be done before the season takes off this year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have a plan in place, and, you know, I always say that we keep that in-house because I don't think it's fair to the player or the agent to speak contractually publicly.
I did want to get your thoughts on the Shedeur Sanders stuff. Not that we anticipated that he would be on your board, but it's a huge media talking point. How did you see it as a talent evaluator, him, this perceived fall? It may not be as dramatic as an NFL evaluator would think, but what did you make of it?
Yeah, I think that's just it, is, you know, people, if I want to say, like, people have to have read the entire book, I guess, per se. And everybody has their different rankings, and especially when you get into that position. And I just believe that, you know, the teams that were in that market did not have him ranked as high as the outside world thought. And when you talk about just the outside world's rankings, they don't know, unless you got it from the GM or the head coach, which nobody would ever get, then you just don't know. So, and I just think that once you get past the second round or third round, then sometimes kind of the music kind of stops in terms of, you know, filling those starter level or future starter roles. And then you start looking into, you know, okay, well, all right, now you're in kind of the backup territory after a certain point. And then, okay, so when are you going to pick your, you know, favorite backup? So, I just think that all plays in part of it. I remember back in 2020, I think 2022, I believe, that there was a clump of quarterbacks. A lot of them went in the third round. And I remember a lot of people had us linked to taking one in the first round. And I remember that, you know, we traded up for Jameson Williams, and my phone starts just blowing up about, is this the quarterback? Is this the quarterback? Is this the quarterback? And I'm like, no, it's Jameson Williams. Like, that's who it's for. And so then afterwards I was asked, okay, are you surprised that these quarterbacks slid? And I was like, well, I don't know about slid. They were taken, I think, that specific year in 22. We had them all in the third round. And so they went in the third round, and that was it. And so I just think that, man, a lot more respect has to be given for that evaluation process. It's almost like if you were a member of a book club, right? And, you know, you meet about the book, and say you've only read a chapter. Say you've only read a chapter of the book, and would you, and everybody else has read the entire book, would you go into that meeting for that book and be as convicted as, oh, this is not a good book, this is a bad book? You ain't even read the damn book. And I don't know what the first chapter of the book is. Is the first chapter the mock drafts? Is it the stats? Is it the highlights? Is it the but what I do know is that, man, what you haven't read is you hadn't pressed play and watched every single snap from the past 2 years of that player. You haven't gathered all the background. You haven't gathered all the, you know, mental makeup. You haven't gathered all the injury information. You're not looking at a book. You know what I mean? So all that stuff, that's the whole book. That's the whole book. And I'm not, I say that very respectfully, because right, I don't expect people on the outside to be even in a position to read that whole book. But it is interesting that if you were in that book club and you've only read just a chapter of it, you probably would be like, I don't know about the book, because I haven't read it all. So when you talk about, like, slides, sometimes it's not a slide. Sometimes a player was taken where he was probably taken. It's just that information wasn't available to the outside.
Brad, we appreciate the perspective as always. Thanks for making some time with us this morning.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. Yep.
All right, Lions General Manager Brad Holmes, 97.1.
All right, that's what it sounded like Friday. Well, mostly Friday. Kang on the air earlier in the day. The actual pick, he called it. And then Scott Anderson, the oh my God, from when he called the first round pick on Thursday night during our draft cast. It was a hell of a pick, Kang. Well done. Although people think, like, they want lottery numbers from you and all that.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that's not the same.
No, that's not the same thing. He's not even like a football guru, although you know your stuff. What you are is a Brad Holmes guru. You are good at reading Brad Holmes' decision making.
And we also threw out the name Tate Ratledge. So I feel like Kang's on, you are on some kind of heater, man.
You guys have always wanted to be that fly on the wall.
Yeah.
I am that fly. I am that fly.
Kang's a fly, there people.
That's right. Be homie. We're on the same page, me and him.
Yeah.
Tesla, though, honestly, local kid, great story. Big, strong, right? RAS score, very good.
Yep.
Plays special teams, likes to block as a receiver. We mentioned earlier, hey, man, Amon-Ra St. Brown, then JMO on 2 years. They had 1 year contracts behind him. So wide receiver was kind of a need here.
You know what's funny about it is I almost feel like the Lions overemphasize certain things and it works for them. I think that's almost like they'd rather have a wide receiver that's an elite blocker than elite pass catcher. Like, they love that stuff. They love it. And it's worked well for them.
Gator, what did you think when you heard the pick?
Of Tesla?
Yeah, Tesla.
I was a little stunned. First, because, isn't that what Kang just... like, didn't he say that yesterday?
Did that bastard do it again?
That's kind of nuts. But really, I was stunned because of what they gave up to move up to take him. I'm like, they don't have to give up anything. They can get this guy if they want him now in the third round, or if they wanted to wait later. I felt like this is a guy they could have later. But there was a sense of urgency. Brad Holmes doesn't care about the picks at this point. Just move up, get his guys, and he got his guys. I like the player. I like the makeup of the player. The fact that he's, you know, from the state of Michigan is kind of cool. The story going from Hillsdale to Arkansas is cool. And he's got good size, decent speed, and catches the ball more with his hands than his body. You like to hear that stuff. And really what Brad Holmes had to say about him yesterday or the day before, it was kind of damning of Arkansas in the way that they used him or didn't use him. It was like, you know, he wasn't targeted that much, but every time they did, this guy's making plays.
You know what's funny? Is we will never hear the complaint again that the Lions don't mind Hillsdale and Egypt.
Right. Yeah.
We'll never hear that complaint again.
That was odd, to say the least. That was odd. But, you know, when you look at the players that the Lions drafted, that still fits the same categories that they're always looking for, the same criteria that they're looking for. They want guys who love football. They got a guy in Hassanen, who is somebody who said he would die for Dan Campbell. I mean, that's what you want. Yeah. Then they take...
Actually, I don't want anyone to die.
Well, no, but I mean, okay. That's the kind of the attitude that you like to hear. And they've got other guys that were, you know, multiple-year captains with other teams. And the safety they took from Georgia is, you know, going to be a special teams guy. That's what they're looking for. They need guys that they can elevate the special teams game. Because special teams is a pretty big deal, actually. Can make the difference in the game and try to fortify that position and or that area of the field. I mean, you can understand most of the picks they made. The trading up to get it, you know, did they pass on other players? I'm sure they passed on players that people like and would have liked to have seen.
You mean fans?
Yes.
Yeah.
Without question. And not addressing the... edge rusher until the sixth round. That's going to be one that fans are going to be pointing a finger at. You will be watching to see what Mike Green's career holds for him. You know, if you were going to move up to 57, I'm like, are they going to take Mike Green here? Nope. It took Tate Ratledge, who's I think is going to be a really good player for this team in the future.
In some ways, I almost feel like watching the reaction. I think the Tate Ratledge pick might be their most popular pick. They have done the least sexy thing you could do, which is bolster the interior of your lines. If you get an edge rusher, that's kind of a sexy pick. You get an offensive tackle, a bookend tackle. That's sexier than interior offensive line. It creates more juice. Anybody that's going to have the football in their hands, any other offensive position is more exciting than interior offensive line. Defensively, sometimes, you know, a middle linebacker, although those guys put up big numbers, defensive tackles don't. Where they get high marks is the least sexy, exciting, buzz-creating picks of all. Yet, these feel like the kind of picks that become the foundation of being a great football team. They now have multiple young guards competing for that next wave of offensive linemen. And I would imagine Graham Glasgow's going, not so fast, my friend. I'm not giving up my job without a battle.
Well, lights a fire under him, too. So you've got, I mean, real competition there with Mahogany and other two rookies. And as you said, Glasgow. And You know, are one of these guys going to be groomed to be the next center for this team? When Frank Ragnow decides that he's going to walk away, perhaps. Mm-hmm. You know, it allows Giovanni Manu to play more tackle and not have to worry about getting reps at guard. Colby Sorsdahl, what's his future with this team? And then there's lots to look at with what they've got on the offensive line and reserves.
248-539-9797. Phone calls, feedback. Also from the draft, the people that wanted an edge rusher, I mean, am I shocked that in a year that has a deep and what looks like a very a bunch of edge rushers worth investigating, am I shocked that they didn't take one? I guess nothing should shock me as it pertains to Brad Holmes in the draft. I am more than a little surprised. When they were on the clock in the first round, there were a lot of guys. Donovan Ezra-Rocket was there. Mike Green was there. Nick Scorton was there. JT Tuumalo was there. In the second round, Mike Green was still there. Landon Jackson was there. Jackson was available in the third round. Princely Amanmielen, Josiah Stewart, Jordan Birch from Oregon. There were a lot of guys that got very high. They looked at many of them had flaws, okay? Yes. Understandably so. That's why they were not top end of the first round picks. And they didn't bite on any of them. And I'll go back to what we always say is that Brad Holmes is true to himself, true to what they believe. And when I think they get away, the truth is, I don't think they draft for need, but I do think they trade to get the highest rated player in a dwindling pool of players at a position of need. When they say, okay, that might be like, they must, I would love to see their wide receiver board. And I would love to see their edge rusher board because they took the 25th edge rusher that went in this draft. How much higher did they have Tesla and the edge rusher ranked?
I want to know about Tyleek Williams.
Do you?
Yeah. Because if they're doing all this maneuvering in the draft to move up to take Tate Ratledge, move up to take Isaac Tesla, couldn't they have used some of that draft capital and moved from 28 to 20 or whatever they could have? Like, that's why I want to see where the defensive tackles rated because of, you know, who went ahead of them. Obviously, you know, the big four went and the Lions got Tyleek Williams as being the fifth defensive tackle taken in the draft. But where do they have him rated with Kenneth Grant, rated with Derek Harmon, rated with Walter Nolan?
Well, remember the quote about the most instinctual, there was one other defensive tackle they thought was as instinctive, which is funny because, I mean, that doesn't mean he was the second defensive tackle. It just means there were two that they thought played with great instincts. Tyleek Williams was one of them. The other thing I'll say about Tyleek Williams, for those of you who want more of a pass rush, don't forget that this guy could absolutely impact the pass rush in a very positive way. When a defensive tackle collapses the pocket and makes it harder for a quarterback to climb up in the pocket, to step up in the pocket, they've got nowhere to go, right? You got your edge rusher coming off the edge, and that's Aiden Hutchinson. Then you got somebody else that's got to hold their own and provide no escape route. And then you got a collapsing pocket from the inside. If Tyleek Williams lives up to their billing, excuse me, this could be a very effective draft pick in terms of helping out the pass rush. I don't know if he's going to do it from day one. That's a tough position to break in. I think he's going to get every opportunity, though, with a Lee McNeil out.
Yeah, he should. He'll get opportunities to be in that rotation right away. But look at Ohio State, what they did last year, you know, because that's a pretty good defensive football team, national championship team. JT Tuumalo led the team with 12.5 sacks. Jack Sawyer had 9 sacks. That's coming from your edge. Cody Simon, a linebacker, had 7. Then the safety had 6. Then to get down to Tyleek Williams, a couple more players down at 2.5. So he's already, he was playing on a pretty good defensive team. Did those guys benefit from him being in the middle?
Sure.
I'm sure they did. The numbers aren't like crazy great numbers, but when you start looking and adding those numbers up, you're like, wow, that's a lot of sacks distributed between the first 5 or 6 players on that team. They had a good pass rush at Ohio State, 53 sacks total.
It's funny. I think a past version of me would have been more questioning this draft. But after watching Brad Holmes cook all these years, I'm like, okay, I don't get it, but Adam, you know, that's fine the way he's drafted. Let's see what this turns into, which, you know, I trust that these picks will be good when it's all said and done, because so frequently in the past, he's done exactly that. He's nailed draft picks.
Good to have everybody. Pistons fever. I know the NFL draft is big, but people have been rifling through the till here with the Pistons, and there's a lot of conversation. Lions draft, look, I'll give you a couple minutes here, and if you want it, call in. But it's simple. They drafted big people. They solidified both fronts. I know that they didn't get the edge many of you clamored for. I just don't have anger anymore, because ultimately it's not my job on the line. Brad Holmes is either going to be right and have the receipts and bring us a Super Bowl and it all worked, or they're going to get aced out again and people are going to start asking questions of why this guy refuses to make legitimate investment in edge rushers. That's really just the only two outcomes. I told you. Hell, I predicted Tyleek Williams was one of a couple names for me at 28. I like the pick. Yeah. It's not sexy. Taking Miles Frazier out of LSU. Taking Tate Ratledge out of Georgia. Guards, not sexy. You
inside
know what I like?
Big people.
Yeah. And I love it. And yeah, they're brand names. When you hack it at LSU and you hack it at Georgia, hey, if that's confirmation bias by me, fine. Oh. I like guys who have played on the big stage. Now, the only question would be, all right, Elite Raz, they essentially gave up 3 third-round picks to take Tesla, and you're like,
why?
Did I need to do that for a receiver? But let me just remind you of one thing before people start to slander.
Okay,
hold on. Work with me now. These are the same people who found Cooper Kupp, and they found Amon-Ra St. Brown, and I want to give them credit for something else. Found Josh Reynolds off the scrap heap, found Tim Patrick, who had basically been dead for 2 years. The point I'm making is you don't find a lot of 6'4", 220-pound receivers who run a 4'4", 3'40 with, what is it? What is it, Rico?
Elite Raz.
Bang. So look, okay. I don't know. I'm just saying overall, I'm not bent out of shape. And the kid you took from Boise, Al-Hassamin or whatever the hell is the Egyptian kid, I'm a loser. I've watched him a number of times because Cash the Ticket loves Boise State football. The kid didn't even play high school football. He didn't even understand what football was. It was like the Mahomes commercial. Football? All this guy does is worked his way into being a high-level college football player at mid-level range. Rico, the kid plays with his hair on fire. I don't know if he makes the team. I don't know if he'll turn into the next, you know, superstar or a cut. But I love the kid. Like, the story's awesome, and his ability, the way he plays. What am I going to say? I like their draft. I don't love it, but I liked it.
Okay, you know what, Mike? And if it works out, great. To me, you took another developmental player who's just learning the game of football. Didn't we just do this last year?
That was a little later. What round did they take Al-Hassamin?
Six.
I believe that was the sixth round.
You could draft Gerald Ford in the sixth round. He's dead, okay, and right, I wouldn't care.
No, that's why I'm like, okay, fine.
What if he's the next Mahogany?
And what if he's not? And what if he's the next Balcony? I don't know.
Okay. Do you really have an issue?
Sixth round, yes, sixth round.
Do you have an issue with the pick of Tesla, the kid from Arkansas?
I do. I mean, because, okay, the Elite Raz and all of that, something tells me he would have still been there later on in that round. You didn't have to move up 32 spots to get him. I don't think that there was this clamoring that we got to get Tesla. We got to get him. You could have just waited. You traded away more future picks, just like you traded away third-round pick this year for Manu last year. You've done it again.
But here's what I like. That's Brad Holmes asking the jackpot.
Okay.
Because if it doesn't work, here's our receipts. So, just like the Broderick Martin experiment, that's dead.
Right, but if you told me, okay, that he moved up to get a certain, like, you said you're not moving J-Mo, but you drafted a receiver. Like, did you just draft Tim Patrick's replacement?
Yes.
You had to give up extra picks to get Tim Patrick's replacement.
You don't remember what a certain somebody told you before the draft started. You just don't remember. I told you, this dude's roster building. Okay. He don't care about what you want. He don't care about what Kenny's mommy wants. He don't give an F. He's roster building. So what did they do? Yes, D-tackle was a need, but let's be clear. They had people on the roster. They built the depth. Mm-hmm. Offensive line. Did they need to draft two guards? Probably next year. What did they do? Year ahead of it. Roster building. You just nailed it. Right. Tim Patrick's replacement? Yeah. He's roster.
Right, no. I'm okay. Did you have to give up so much to get Tim Patrick? Not Amon Ra.
He has to
Tim
be right.
Freaking Patrick.
I know.
The sixth option on the team.
He has to be right or he faces the wrath. I mean, that's, Rico, I get everything you're saying. It's just, this is Brad Holmes being the smartest guy in the room. He's going to get it right or it's going to look really stupid. I don't know.
And that's what I like about this whole thing, too, by the way, is he's either going to look great or he's going to look very, or he's going to look like that. That's you're right. Ass in the jackpot. That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
So just to me, overall, if you have thoughts on the Lions draft, go ahead. I want to get to our Pistons callers. There's not, I don't even think Rico was upset. It was more,
what?
Did we really need to do that in
for
the third
him,
round?
For this guy to replace this guy.
But here's where.
Not Laporta.
But here's where I think ultimately, if you're going to be upset, it's a personality thing. Like, I don't need the pithy remarks in his little jersey at the press conference. I don't need any of that.
Right.
Well, it's because Edge is your priority. It's not ours. Oh, okay.
And here's Fine. My thing. If you can't question something, then you're a part of a cult. Sorry. I didn't agree with everything.
It is so turning into
for,
that.
For the, oh, you got to let Brad, he knows more about football than... Then that's a cult thing. I can think for myself. That was one pick that I was just like, you probably could have got. I don't think the 32 other teams were like, man, I really hope Tesla lands to us.
I can't speak to it. Look, I just can't. I mean, it's like I don't know that answer. You have a right to believe it. I'm not going to go there because, man, when you get in the third round of the draft, I can't act like I know these teams' value boards. Maybe somebody was all bricked up to draft this kid and they needed to do it. Maybe they had a score that they thought he was a first-round pick. Rico, it's his draft
board. The other Texas receiver didn't even get drafted. I got to think that he would have been there.
Well, Isaiah Bond?
Yeah.
Well, the guy's up on a sexual assault charge.
But as you said, Mike, doesn't matter in the NFL. If you can help me win, don't care.
Hey.
Well, the case is kind of currently going, so I think teams are like, let's wait and see.
Yeah, also, too, is the teams have more information than we do. When your heads of security are former FBI, you know, CIA, detective, I'm leaving it to them. If the kid didn't get drafted, something's up.
To quote a man smarter than me, hey, the NFL will take killers.
Exactly. Rico, I'm making a point to you that it's saying something that he didn't get drafted. Okay. That's all. Hey, I hope I'm wrong. I don't want to see anybody. I don't know. And he wasn't very good this year on the field. 248-539-9797. Okay, people. Trevor next. 97.1. Trev, what's up?
Hey, what's up, fellas? So first and foremost, let me just get straight to it. With everything that y'all just broke down and explained, I think it's safe to say that we have a lot more questions than we have answers, especially on the defensive line, specifically. First of all, I like the Tylee Williams pick, right? But did you really have to draft defensive interior when you burned a third-round pick 2 years ago on Broderick Martin? Or what about the fifth-round pick that you burned to trade Za'Darius Smith just to cut him and want him to come back on a cheaper deal, which at this point, why the hell should he?
Oh, yeah, and Trevor, by the way, you gave up extra picks to get Martin, but go ahead.
Oh, thank you. So more draft capital that you're burning that you could have used to get a quality edge, like maybe a Trey Hendrickson or – you know, some of these other edges outside of, you know, Max Crosby or Myles Garrett that we never really had a chance of getting in the first place, but I digress. The two third-rounders or the three third-rounders that you burned for Tesla, did you really have to get him when you could have gotten a Josiah Stewart, a Landon Jackson, or somebody else that was just as quality as a, you know, James Pierce Jr. or Mike Green? And then for you to come out in your press conference and being all snarky and arrogant saying, oh, well, edge rush is more of your priority than it is ours. Okay. Like, you didn't see – or you didn't just see the Eagles just completely dismantled and had Mahomes running for his life in this past Super Bowl. Or let's go back to the Super Bowl where the damn Seahawks played the Broncos and had Peyton Manning on life support. Like, the more of the story, you need a good pass for us to win championships, period.
Okay, Trevor, I just want to say this because I don't think you're wrong, but I think you're either ignoring the reality or you don't understand it. Look, I agree with you, but Trevor, He's basically saying, we have everything we need. You don't know. Okay, show me. Because if they go out there this year and they don't win a playoff game, guess what? Instead of being up there right. in their cute little matching jerseys, they'll be up there in clown wigs. Right. So I mean, Trevor, you just got to let it roll. I'm not mad at you at all, T. It's just, I don't know what else to say. I'm not going to yell about it anymore.
I've seen the 15-2. Now show me what else you can do.
That's the whole point. Yeah. Oh, it's not your problem. Fine. You've got all the answers. Then I expect a show me. Right. At least get to the NFC title game or God help us get to a Super Bowl. Because if you don't, you can play dress up a different way next year.
Because you can mock people all you want about, oh, the edge runner. That's you guys think. Okay.
Yeah, I also love how that's being viewed like somehow, oh, only casuals. No, actually, Earth believes the pass rush is the only way to stop anyone in this league.
I guess I missed the receipts press conference after they lost to the Commanders. I guess I missed that one this year. I was on vacation.
See, now you're being mean.
No, that's factual.
Oh,
and facts are mean.
Kenny. Tomorrow, live from the world headquarters, a lot of bathwater.
Steve.
Steve Eiserman, 2 p.m. tomorrow, and I'm hearing whispers we're carrying it live.
That truly is the Trump voice, though. Is him a lot of prospects? We have a lot of future.
Nygaard. People tell me he's another Gretzky.
I heard he's pretty good.
that Gretzky was good, and he's good too.
No, tomorrow at 2. I'm hearing whispers. We're carrying it live.
Sandine Pelica. We're going to hear a lot about Sandine Pelica.
People compare him to Lidstrom. Yeah. They say it. They do.
Yeah, Mrazek. He's back.
But are you excited or are you dreading tomorrow at 2?
First of all, it's an eye roll because I think this maybe should have happened a little sooner than the middle of the first round. But I'm resigned to the possibility that we're going to learn nothing, we're going to see nothing, we're going to have nothing,
okay.
A lot of nothing.
Okay, oh, you're done. 248-539-9797. What did you like and dislike from the Lions draft? And Pistons fans, we continue to roll with you. Yes, you got screwed on the last call. You did about 15 things to lose the game in the fourth quarter. Are we all united? Hey, it was great with the gym class heroes this year. Are we ready to get a star this summer so we can move this forward? All that and more, 97.1.
The Lions. John, you pointed this out. It's rather astute. The roster is largely set now.
Yeah.
They may make a move, and hey, Sedarius would make a lot of sense. But as they sit today, free agency is mostly done. The draft is all the way done. Are you more or less confident that this team can win the Super Bowl? And we want to throw that out to you guys as well. It's a time to take inventory post-draft. 248-539-9797.
Your answer?
I hate doing this because I'm going to be the bad guy. I think they're a Super Bowl contender, but I feel less confident than I did last year.
Okay.
And some of this is the obvious edge spot that's unaddressed. The draft itself was quality, but I think it was an extender draft more than it was a draft that made them considerably better.
Mm-hmm.
Tyreek Williams helps extend this without Aleem McNeil. Bringing in Ratledge helps you replace the loss of Zeitler. You just kind of stay in the course as one of the contenders. I don't think they got out in front and made themselves a more aggressive contender, so I feel less confident.
So they didn't directly address the edge. And this is where you get into some of the gray area. They only had Aiden Hutchinson for 5 games last year. And, I mean, who knows how many he plays this year. I do believe that he will be healthy and 100% before the regular season. So, indirectly, he'll be back in that edge position.
But with him, the last couple seasons, they have not had any production opposite him.
Not a lot of production, no, in terms of sacks. Their quarterback pressure rate, they were number 11 last year. And this is with Aiden Hutchinson only playing 5 games. So if he's back and he plays, I don't know, just say 15 of the 17. We would hope 17 of the 17. But if he plays 15 of the 17, wouldn't you expect that this team, instead of a quarterback pressure rate that would land them 11th, that they might actually be 6 or 7 with the full season of Aiden Hutchinson?
But potentially. I do want to push back a little bit, though. Pressures matter. sacks are the most important because the play
don't
ends.
Don't we also agree that they'll get more sacks with Aiden Hutchinson?
23rd in sacks last year. And again, I'll point out they have not had a true running mate for Aiden since that burst of James Houston in 2022. We're talking 3 years coming up on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a fair question if you're going to dethrone the greats in the game to not have a pass rush from both sides.
They've addressed the Aleem McNeil while he is out.
But that's breaking even, right?
At best.
Yeah.
At best.
And at best, a rookie replaces Zeitler. At best.
Well, yeah, but they have more depth, at least we believe more quality depth on that offensive line. So if Mahogany misses a game or two, insert Graham Glasgow. If Ratledge misses a game or two, insert Graham Glasgow. I think both of those guys, for where Graham is in his career, and I don't want to discount what he's been able to do. He's been very good, very productive. Last year was not his best year. And now you have two younger players that presumably will be healthier, that will be a little bit more resilient throughout the course of the season and not miss some games at the end due to, you know, basically maintenance. And now you have Graham to be able to back up all three of those spots inside. You still have a Wusika, who we know is coming and played well. You've got Dan Skipper as your swing tackle. We don't know yet, and I'm not going to make any predictions about what Giovanni Manu will be. I would hope that at some point we see him as a reliable backup for one of those tackle spots. We'll see. But I think on the offensive line, it's actually a little bit of a net gain. Tim Patrick, second year of the offense, and you have Tesla in there to bolster the depth. What was the conversation going into the season last year? What are they doing at wide receiver 3? That was the big part of the conversation. And another part of the conversation was, what are they doing with kicker? We had no idea what Jake Bates was going to be. Now, he's pretty good last year, and I think he'll be even a tick better, a little more confidence, a little bit more set in his position. And then defensively, a lot of the improvements are just going to be coming with, I do think DJ Reed is at least as good as Carlton Davis, maybe a bit of an upgrade. Amik Robertson, second year of this system. Tyrion Arnold, second year. We expect him to take a jump, and we expect at some point for Ennis Rakestraw to be a part of the conversation. I think there is, on the player side of things, and we haven't even talked about, we talked a little bit about the offense. I think there's a net minimal gain, but there is a gain from where they were at this point last year to where they are this year. Now, the biggest question, which I thought this was where you were going to attack me on this.
What?
Coordinators.
Yeah, but I didn't make a big deal about it at the time, so I don't want to come out now and try to force something that's not there. I think the offense will continue to be very good. Ben Johnson said that on the way out. He goes, this thing is built for it. They bring in Johnny Morton, who was on this staff previously. Yep. He'll put his own spin on it, but it's still Dan Campbell steering the ship, and Jared Goff is the quarterback, and this offensive line is there, and the tailbacks are there, and St. Brown and Laporta and Jamo. I think the offense will continue to be very good. Maybe not number one, but one of the four or five best in the league. Defensively, I think that's a question.
Calvin Shepard's never been a play caller.
Yeah,
and although we did learn that there were times throughout the course of the preseason that he was allowed to call some plays.
And I think the personnel is more of a question on that side of the ball, right? If you're working with better players on offense, I think that helps smooth the transition.
Yeah, but I also think on defense, I mean, you're going to get Malcolm Rodriguez back. You're getting Derek Barnes back. Alex Anzalone's there. And he may actually be the backup to Jack Campbell at this point, because Jack Campbell now going into year 3, I expect him to take another step forward, and I thought he played really well last year. Brian Branch in year 3, expect him to be better than in year 2. Kirby Joseph, I don't know that Kirby Joseph can outproduce what he did last year leading the NFL, and some of the interceptions are opportunistic.
Yeah.
The ball just kind of somewhat has to come your way. You have to obviously be in position to make those plays, and some of them were just him being good. But Kirby Joseph, it's a wash, at least.
Few ticket texts that have already started to come in. Again, open lines on this. More or less confident now that the roster is mostly set. More or less confident that they will win the Super Bowl. First text, I feel less confident because the Eagles got so much better. You have a puzzled look on your face.
Yeah.
They lost some dudes.
They lost some dudes, yeah.
They lost Milton Williams in the middle. They lost Sweat on the end.
Mm-hmm.
I like Jihad Campbell.
Darius Slay's not there anymore either.
Slay's gone, but they do have a couple nice corners that they can slot in.
The impact of not having a veteran around,
yeah,
I don't know.
That's significant.
Look, I think that Eagles offseason, because I was kind of looking at it when these texts came in just to refresh myself, it's been kind of neutral.
Yeah, so I think the Lions have been kind of neutral, right?
Yeah, and I think what happened at the end of last year is the Eagles were better than the Lions when the Lions were healthy. I do. And to me, that's why
kind of impossible to judge that.
It's just my opinion. I think one of the things that happened late in the year, we talked about this when the Eagles won it, was just how dominating they were late in the season, and that especially that late regular season win at Baltimore, we probably overlooked that a little bit. I mean, they're just so strong in the trenches.
Yeah, I mean, the only offensive line that rivals Detroit's is Philly. Tech of Texture says, Cookie, your obsession with the edge is jading your views on the Lions. When the roster took the field last year before Hutch went down, were you not saying they could win it all? How did they get worse? I'm not saying they can't win it all, to be clear. Yeah. I think they're in the tier of, I don't know, what would you say, 3 to 5 teams that are best positioned to win the Super Bowl?
Sure.
Do I feel better than I did a year ago? No. Question for you guys. Draft is done. Roster's mostly set. Do you feel more or less confident that this team will win the Super Bowl?
Yeah, and I'd love to hear from our listeners as to why. Why is it you feel more confident this year, or why is it that you feel less confident than you did a year ago?
People are doing just that on the ticket text. Less confident because of Goff's 4-interception playoff game. The guy is still here, still the quarterback. He's also the guy that won 2 playoff games the year before and played well enough to win 3 the year before. Mm-hmm. He does come with some...
There's some baggage.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's positives, there's negatives, and I think... If this offense is going to operate the way it did last year, and as Ben Johnson mentioned, the train will stay on the tracks, it's in large part because of the upside of Jared Goff.
And they're reinforcing the trenches. They'll still run the football. They'll still play action pass. They'll do all the things you need to do to help Jared Goff be the most successful quarterback he can be. We are forgetting health will simply make this roster that much better in and of itself.
So that's a huge part of it, sure.
Did you also have to factor in that the schedule for 2025 is 3 times tougher? I feel less confident.
Okay, you can be you can be confident that schedule will better prepare them for the playoffs, and their record might not be 15-2, could be 12-5. Thank you. Could be 11-6. Hell, it could be 10-7.
But you'd feel less confident knowing you got to win multiple road playoff games than getting all of it at home, wouldn't you?
Well, I mean, going into the playoffs 2 years ago, you thought you were only going to have 1 playoff game.
Right, but it's an uphill climb.
Yeah. Sure, there's no question about it.
So signing up for an uphill climb would make you less confident.
By the way, the schedule game, the Eagles have a very hard schedule, too. They have to play a first-place schedule, but they also have to play the AFC West, which is the gauntlet of coaches right now. Every coach has appeared in a Super Bowl, and 3 have won it.
Yeah. So
that's a good point.
I mean, you can have a worse regular season record, but still be a better team. That's very possible and might be likely this year.
Well, that's what John in Lake Orion says. They are as much of a Super Bowl contender as they were last year. The problem is they won't go 15-2, so fans will freak out.
Well, that's going to be the easy take, is that they won't go 15-2. We don't know. I'm reserving my schedule prediction until we actually hear what that schedule looks like.
A couple weeks away, 2 weeks from Thursday.
But the reason I think that has nothing to do with talent on the field, has nothing to do with health, it has nothing to do with who's calling the plays on either side. Every time I've been around any of these guys this offseason, and I've seen Sewell and I've seen Goff and saw Rodrigo last week for the draft, I've had a chance to be around them and some of the coaches as well. There's an edge to these guys. They certainly... there was an edge coming off of the NFC Championship loss, and we heard it from Penei Sewell, and how much he watched that game and what that game did to him. There is an absolute edge to these guys about how this season ended against Washington at Ford Field. And I don't necessarily want to call it an embarrassment that is creating this edge, but just an unbelievable disappointment that they are feeling, a missed opportunity that they're feeling about both years. They know that there is a window. They know that they've had some great opportunities and have come up short. And there's an edge with, and we've heard Dan Campbell talk about how do you reset and get back to work. And I have all the confidence in the world that he's going to set that tone. He's already set that tone with the team, but that the leaders of this team that are now a year more advanced, Penei Sewell, who is what, fourth year?
He's a stud.
Going into his fifth year. Amon-Ra St. Brown. There's no one more driven than him. That it's going to permeate again throughout the rest of the team. And that edge is really what's going to is also what's telling me that this team is going to be more successful this year than they were last year. And it might not be a 15-2 regular season record.
Someone say edge?
Oh, jeez.
I'm not going there yet.
You're such a dork.
But you walked me right into that. Ticket Texter says, hey, Cookies, maybe Chapman could play edge for the Lions this season. Him or Bregman, LOL. They'll add Za'Darius. They're going to be fine. They'll be headed back. I think Za'Darius makes a lot of sense, especially at this point. Texter says, for as dominant as the Eagles were, weren't they an incomplete pass away from being knocked out of the playoffs in the second round by the Rams at home?
Yeah, I mean, they also gave up 5 sacks in that game. That vaunted offensive line. Now, they found a way to win that game. In the snow, they did what they had to do, and obviously they went on to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, but let's not downplay what the Eagles did. They won 15 of their last 16 games, one loss from early October till the end of the season. That only loss, their quarterback got hurt in that game. And in the playoffs, they won 3 of the 4 games by double digits, including the Super Bowl. They literally discoed their way through the playoffs and won the Super Bowl, and we said they had a neutral offseason. So I'm going to be very cautious to say the Lions are better. I think they held serve, and we're going to have a hell of a chase between the two of them, but I don't feel better or more confident knowing that they're still out there, and we did not get better.
I'm not saying right now that they're better than the Eagles.
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying they're worse than the Eagles. We won't know until they actually face off. But what I'm saying is I believe that they're a better team. The Lions are a better team right now, more prepared for this upcoming season than they were last year.
How about another contender that may be making some moves that stand out? The Commanders upgrading their offensive line this offseason should be scary for the Lions. Tunsil and then a first-round pick on an offensive tackle. Already couldn't get to him in the playoff. Mm-hmm. Are they reinforcing that so that he can be a problem for years to come? Yeah, looks like it.
No question they are. They're going to be a problem.
So if we think the Lions effectively held serve but are going to be healthy, the Eagles had a neutral offseason, but here come the Commanders, right?
Here come the Commanders, here come the Vikings, the Packers, the Bears. Like, it's going to be a tougher division. We talk about the schedule, and yeah, I know that they're playing a first-place schedule. You're going to play all those other first-place teams, but it's also going to be tougher in division.
Let's get to Kevin and Warren. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Hey, I was listening here a couple minutes ago, and I heard the infamous words, the window they have to win. I guess, you know what, Bill Belichick missed that memo about there being a window. Because if I'm not mistaken, his window was probably 10 or 12 years, maybe more.
Yeah, it was more, 20 years, but there was a big gap in the middle as well.
Yeah. So anyways, there is, and I'm bullish on the Lions. I think they're going to be fantastic, and I'm just so happy that we've got this kind of team to root for after, you know, 50 years of futility. But, you know, there's things besides these 4 or 5 years that we're really going to try to keep a winning attitude and go after championships year after year after year. So with the leadership we got between Dan Holmes, Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, I think the future is looking very bright. And I think our window is longer than people give us credit for.
I hope you're right. I think you're right as well. I think it's going to be a little bit longer.
But it is ridiculous to compare to the Patriots. They had this guy named Tom Brady at quarterback that tends to give you a second decade to compete. And you're right, John, they did have to pivot. The early Patriots teams were built on guys like Teddy Bruschi and Rodney Harrison and defense. And that window closed because it always does, because players have a shelf life. And then if you're really good at your job, and we think Holmes is, you'll reboot with a completely different group that'll have their own window. That's how this works. The idea that you're going to draft guys and they're going to spend 15 years together, all playing together, and you're going to chase 10 to 15 Super Bowls is fantasy land. It's fairy tale stuff.
And the difficult thing for all of those other teams that are trying to reboot is Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots did it with one quarterback. and he remained playing at a high level for two decades. I think Jared Goff is a very good quarterback. I don't know that he is going to be as good as he is now in 6 or 7 years. I don't even know that he's here in 6 or 7 years. And it's not a, it's not a, a slight on Jared Goff. It's just
reality.
It's going to be another hurdle that New England in that 20-year run didn't have to face.
All right, Lions in the draft. Interesting feedback. Here are some texts we got. Text: Brad is decisive. I applaud him for going after the guys they have identified as fits and coachable. Most talented is secondary for this front office. To date, it has worked so far, aside from a couple like Broderick Martin. Okay. Next text. It almost seems like Brad intentionally didn't pick any touted edge rushers out of stubbornness.
I can't disagree with that statement.
Oh, I disagree with it. There's no way in hell that he didn't do it.
It seems.
But if you want to make a case that Brad is doing it out of stubbornness,
you can make a case.
It's not true, of course.
No, I think he knows what he's doing with building this team, and he's built a monster. Won 15 games last year, mm-hmm. despite losing all these players on defense to injuries throughout various points of the season. I think it, you know, really what it comes down to is they expect these guys to get back healthy and compete again for another big season. Can they stay healthy? That's the thing they have to do. They've got to keep these guys healthy. In the meantime, what do you do? Fortifying defensive tackle with Taliq Williams. Is that a position of need? Yep. Is that a pretty good player to get? Yep. Did they add some offensive linemen to try to rebuild for the future and compete at guard? You betcha. They got two really good guards in this draft. That's impressive. To go and did they reach to get Isaac Tesla? Probably reach to get him, but I think that the logic behind what Brad Holmes did in trading up to get him was that at this point, they've already built this team up really well. Now they're just getting the players they want. So if it means that they give up future draft capital, it's okay because they're not looking to have a 10-person draft class anymore. They're looking to have the most potent draft class that they can, and they want to take the big guy, 6'4", 210 pounds, who runs really well and catches everything that's thrown to him, and just go get him, get that guy. They brought him in for an interview. They liked him. They had the personal workout. I don't know if it's necessarily a position of need, but it's a player they like. And that goes to Brad's thing about, I don't care about position. I don't care about need. We just want football players. They got themselves a football player.
248-539-9797. Ken, you're on 97 on the ticket. Hi, Ken.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I get to do champ and chump. I've never done that.
Let's go.
Let's see. Champ is in Brad We Trust.
Okay.
So, going for all the Lions picks. I have no reason to down him. I don't know any more about football than he does. So, go Brad. And then my chump is the reason I called Mr. Sanders. I followed him quite a bit more this year after last year, you know, how well they did. And I saw a bunch of interviews, maybe half a dozen with him. And I swear, this draft, I don't know how anybody wasn't surprised, but if you watched any of his interviews, it was a classic case of, don't you know who I am? I mean, his attitude, humility, I don't even think is a word that he could even say, because he totally, I'm sure, was like, well, my dad, and the fact that he didn't even have I found out you guys said he didn't have an agent. It was totally like, I'm going off my dad's name or whatever. And that's great for college and high school. And I'm sure he was coddled and, you know, you're great and you're this and you're that. And then he got to the draft and guess what? You know, it's like being 21 and going off to school. Got to put your big boy pants on. And
well, I wonder what it's going to be like when he has a chance to talk with the media in front of cameras and microphones, what he says about the experience. Did he learn anything? Does he want to dispel anything? Is he going to be humble? You know, I think it's one thing to be flashy in front of the cameras and the media and say some brash things. But if you're doing the same thing behind the scenes with the coaching staff, That's the time where you tone things down and you just lock into being, okay, here's the player I am. Yes, I'm confident in what I can do, but let's get to work and do this and that.
I would say that if I were advising him, it would be turn down a bunch of media requests, keep your mouth shut, and if you do end up at a podium, just say, it was a humbling experience. I'm out to change the narrative about my career, but I will be behind the scenes working hard. Nobody's going to work harder to help this organization, and hopefully I can help in some way. And that's all I have to say. I would be quiet, humble, stress that I'm trying to help the team, and that is it. This is my job to help this team. And if that's being a backup, that's being a backup. But, you know, he probably will get in front of the cameras, and I hope for his sake he's humble. I don't think the Lions were a Super Bowl team before the free agency and draft, and I don't think they are now. Malpractice. It's from an unnamed texter. So why weren't they a Super Bowl? I mean, technically, I guess if you didn't make it to the Super Bowl, you're not. But do you think that they are a Super Bowl contender? Are they a Super Bowl contending team? Because I don't know how you could argue they aren't and weren't.
Well, it was tough to be that going into the playoffs because of the injuries that they had. And yet made a valiant effort, fell way short against the Commanders.
Mm-hmm.
Injuries mounted, and the quarterback didn't have a good game.
Nope.
Quarterback had a horrible game. But the regular season, going 15-2, with the roster that they had halfway through the season, when you lose your top edge rusher, who's one of the best in the game, and then a couple games later you lose Aleem McNeil, and all the other players they lost, which are just, it feels like it's countless. There's like 10 guys they lost during the course of the year to injury. And even into the playoffs, in the second play, the second defensive snap, you lose Amik Robertson, who was playing on the outside because Carlton Davis was out.
Yep.
I don't know what to tell you, man. I mean, that was a ballsy effort by that Lions team that epitomized the word grit the entire way because of what they were playing without. Next man up mentality, it struck a chord with these guys, and they went out and won 15 games. Do I expect them to win 15 this year? No. I didn't expect them to win 15 last year. 15's a big, big, big total. But if this team can stay healthy, even before what you drafted, this team should be a contending team.
248-539-9797. I like Zadarius as a Lion, but I think he only gives about 5 to 6 good snaps a game. That's from Steve in Ann Arbor.
Here's what I want to see, Steve. I want to see what he looks like. If they sign Zadarius Smith, if they come to Common Ground and say, okay, we can only pay you this much. Do you want it? And he says, yes, okay, I'll take it at this point. I want to see what Zadarius Smith looks like on the field at the same time with Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah.
And perhaps with a healthy Marcus Davenport as well, for as long as he can stay healthy, because he is productive when he plays, but he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. But that's what I want to see. I want to see the opposite defensive end from Aiden Hutchinson, what they look like on the field while Aiden is there. Because all the attention is going to be paid to big number 97.
I think we can kind of get a sense of who that was, because he did play half the season opposite of Myles Garrett, and he was just about as productive. I would have hoped that the numbers had gone up, but he played 9 games there. He had 5 sacks playing opposite of Myles Garrett. Now extrapolate that over a whole season. I mean, it basically got roughly the same pace in 8 games in Detroit. He had 4 sacks. So I'm not sure it's going to be any different, but if you start thinking about, if opposite of your elite edge rusher, you have a player that's giving you 9 sacks, that's not the end of the world.
Well, he had 23 that's tackles.
Pretty decent.
He had 23 tackles with Cleveland.
And sacks aren't the be-all, end-all. They're They're a big part of the measurement of your rushing, pressures, run support.
But he had 12 with the Lions.
12 what?
12 tackles total with the Lions. He had 23 total with Cleveland last season. He played 9 games with Cleveland, 8 with Detroit. So he was, the sack total is different, or is it right about the same anyway?
Yep.
But he made more of an impact tackling with Cleveland than he did with Detroit while playing with Myles Garrett. So you now play him with Aiden Hutchinson for a full season, would you expect him to be more of a force making tackles?
Yes and no. I would, in that it would help. I also, Gator, we're hanging another year on him, so you know how this works.
This is true.
Before the season last year, I think a lot of people had the Lions going to the Super Bowl, if not winning it, right?
Yep.
This is the same group going into last season as far as the defensive front four. Yes. You know, so why would it change that much? But you know why it did? They saw what happened when those guys aren't around, when they do get hurt. And that playoff game is still resonates with a lot of people where the defense, you know, obviously Goff had a bunch of turnovers and things like that, but the defense wasn't stopping Jaden Daniels either at all. And so throwing the Hutch injury, right, and people are kind of a little panicked that, hey, that Brad didn't do anything with the defensive end spot.
Well, in the draft.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, also free agency. I mean, who did they bring in? They didn't do anything.
Right. I'm just saying that I wanted to make, because he did the trade deadline he did last year.
Yeah, but I'm
but
talking,
you're talking
like
after,
in this offseason, yes. They've added a sixth round pick.
Yep.
Who has, I mean, he's got a track record of being a guy who just hassles quarterbacks for 2 years at Boise State.
And he had some good games against their better opponents, which I like to do. Okay. Against Penn State in the playoff game, he had, I think it was a sack and two more TFL, six tackles total, which is good against a big time playoff team. But for a second there, just brief second, did anyone else go, wait, Savannah State? When you heard the name, I thought of our guy from Savannah State.
I don't remember our guy from Savannah State.
Elwani El Shafi. Do you not remember him?
Hey, the guy that called in 7 years ago or whatever?
Yes. For a brief second, I'm like, wait, what? No, it wasn't him.
No, because I thought he had long left college football. Yeah, well, that's why.
I knew I was wrong, but I was like, wait, what? Our guy? It's Carson Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket.
3 o'clock, nice to have you. Lions fans, going to need your help because, first of all, if you missed it, it's probably worth a listen. I thought Jim and John did a really nice job. And I called Jim and told him personally, you did a better job than I would. I'm just too old and crotchety, and I don't revere athletes, coaches, executives. They're not special. They're people. You know, they poop too, and I just don't really care. Like, none of these people are fighting cancer.
You're not big into getting talked down to?
No, because it's all dumb. All of it. Like, sports is not real. It's entertainment. It's nothing different than what we do. Acting as if they're shaping geopolitics or brokering peace in the Middle East, that's ridiculous. Right. So,
yeah, you're not a hostage negotiator.
No, so I just laugh at it when guys take themselves that seriously. And look, make no mistake, guys like Eiserman and Brad take themselves incredibly seriously. And I thought the guys did a good job of keeping it even, asking really good questions, and Brad just wasn't going to give an inch. Now, the best way to set it up is, look, I have stayed out of this. I had a dream sequence where I said, look, I'd love to get a big-time edge rusher this offseason. But you haven't heard me yell about it. I didn't yell about it with the draft. I'm done. I let go of it months ago when it was clear they weren't going to try. And this draft went on. My thoughts, which are available on our YouTube page, I'm sure. I like the draft. Fine with it. Other people are more upset. They didn't draft an edge. And depending who you talk to, sounds like they tried to trade up to get one in this draft. The point is, Brad Holmes was asked about it. David, I want you to specifically set up some of the audio you have. And then I'm going to turn it over to Rico. Rico is far angrier than I am. I'm more like sadistically laughing at it.
Because it was very condescending.
I know. Hold on. Okay. I want to give the people, as Kenny likes to say, some hors d'oeuvre. I want to give them the hors d'oeuvres. And then we can get to the main dish. David, if you would.
So this cut here, this is Jim basically asking him about the edge situation.
Now, there's more, but do you want the second piece before before Rico goes full Monty here? David, do you want to set up the second piece?
Yeah, the second piece is him basically saying, yes, you can draft one every round, but the guy still has to perform.
I guess I don't know how this even got there. Because Cookie started off with a softball question. It's a morning show. It's an easy question. Hey, you know, a lot of people want the edge rushers. And this was his chance to say, you know, you can never have too many. We try, but the cost wasn't there. We don't want to pay that price. I like who we drafted. That's the answer. Brad just woke up and chose violence and said, nah, no softball, grenade. I don't understand. What do you mean you don't understand? Really? I don't understand. Because we already have one. And then at that point, Mike, it just became just condescending. Like, well, what would we do with another edge rusher? I mean, we already have one of the elite edge rushers. So why do you need two? Why do you need two edge rushers? I did not get it. And he goes on, and if you listen to the whole thing, he talks about other teams in the league who have top edge rushers. And I'm thinking to myself, Brad, nobody's saying, okay, I thought it was a pipe dream, the Myles Garrett thing. Like, you're probably not going to get him because he doesn't value the edge rusher like that. And if he doesn't, then just say, I don't value it the way that you guys do. But don't sit here and act like we're just a bunch of idiots because we want to see the team get better. Because you know what helps Aiden out? If you have another edge rusher who could take some of the pressure off of him. So you don't, there's not always going to be a double team. You got to pick your poison. He doesn't even have to be elite, but you can at least address it instead of saying, well, I don't get it because, hey, in the draft, Nick Bosa, can we say that's a good edge rusher? First thing San Francisco did, they went out and drafted another edge rusher. But you're telling me, well, if you got one, that's good. It didn't make any sense because this is the same man. And correct me if I'm wrong, they had a running back, right? But then they went into the draft, drafted, traded up, and got Jahmyr Gibbs. And then you had two running backs. They had a wide receiver, right? We're going to go into the draft. We're going to trade up. We're going to bring in J-Mo. Now you got two receivers. You drafted two corners back-to-back last year. Why are you acting like you can only have one elite edge rusher? Why are you acting like you don't even want to try to get one? It's almost become like it's personal. I'm going to do this without you even realizing you don't know what I know. You haven't read the whole book. You've only read one chapter. I read the book. I've watched 2 years of tape. I know all of this stuff. It's nothing personal, but I know you don't. And it's almost out of spite. He does not want to add an edge rusher. I don't get it. I don't understand. Because, Mike, you've seen it. Top teams know you win with defense. Offense scores a lot of points. But if you, in the end, you got to be able to stop that team in the final 2 minutes to come up with the big stop on a fourth down. You do that with the best available players. You've seen the Eagles draft that way. You've seen, hell, Mike, your team, the Giants, you already had a defensive line. And what did you take? Give me Abdul Carter. Why? It made us better. With him, it's not going to happen. I've come to the point, I don't care. You're never going to draft an edge. I'm not going to ask you to do that. I'm simply saying, I see where the Lions are. You're teetering on winning a Super Bowl. You went out last year. You were 15-2. Imagine if you just got that extra piece to make you a Super Bowl champion. Because when the window closes, it's going to close fast, it's going to close hard, and you're going to be sitting around saying, what happened? I don't understand. Because when you had an opportunity to really reinforce this team, you wanted to get cute about things, and you wanted to tell people about book clubs and stuff, and say, hey, I say this very respectfully, but I read the whole book, and you've read one chapter.
No, I'm not trying to get in the way. No. I'll just wait. It's fine.
I'm good.
You're okay.
It's just condescending.
Like I said, Rico was spicy. I know it is, and I laugh at it. It's fine, because ultimately, if they win the Super Bowl, he's right, and if they don't, it's his ass in the jackpot. I'm with you. The Eagles had a million pass rushers. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 20 had a million pass rushers. The Giants, the two Super Bowls they won. The Denver Broncos, when they had DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller in his prime. Look, I just know the best way to win a Super Bowl. I know I haven't read the whole book club, but it is kind of weird that if you have Aiden, you seem to almost take it personally that people say, get Aiden a bookend.
Right.
Like, get Aiden a guy who can elevate Aiden. I don't I don't know. I'm not yelling about it. I've come to grips with what this is. I just don't understand the level of...
If it was a quarterback, Mike, I get it. You can only play one quarterback at a time. If people are like, hey, you didn't draft a quarterback. Hey, guys, we got Jared Goff. We're paying him a lot of money. Last time I checked, you could play multiple edge rushers, correct? Yeah. I've seen the Eagles put three or four out on the same line at once. The Chiefs have done that. Like, I don't understand why he feels like you could only have one, and then I can just put a bunch of, you know, pylon cones up there, and it's going to be good.
Can I just say one thing? Because I don't want people to get twisted up in this. One, I'm not yelling, Rico is. Two, it's not about the draft for me. It's about everything. It's about trades. It's about free agency. And it's about the draft. Like, on no level did you make a concerted effort to really upgrade that player that's never going to get double teamed. Aiden's always going to get double teamed.
Yeah.
And Aleem McNeil, when healthy, will get double teamed. I don't understand why we need straw man arguments. Oh, well, do they ask about it in other towns? Well, Brad, I can tell you this. The other towns, they don't drink your bathwater when you don't win a playoff game and have a rookie drop his nuts in your house. Yeah. Okay? So I did be careful about the other market thing. This is pretty much the best place to work ever because you can do next to nothing and still be a hero.
Yeah. And a lot of those other towns, they don't get asked because they just go out and find defensive players who could rush the passer.
What do you make of Holmes' answer? That he doesn't understand why people keep asking about a pass rush. I guess that would be the simplest way to talk to the people about it. And I do. I encourage you to listen to the whole interview. I thought Jim and John did a really nice job. 248-539-9797. We can get with you, the people, next. And if you have a different spin on it, feel free. I mean, if you say, oh, I loved what he said, God bless. Do your thing. I'm not mad about it. I chuckle. I mean, man. The way that guy talks, you'd think he bleeped Chanel. I mean, come on. Can we just live in the real world for a minute here?
On the solid gold toilet.
Yeah, you didn't win a playoff game last year. Injuries or not, you didn't win a playoff game. Like, cool it. You're not fighting pancreatic cancer like the people at Carmanos.
And this
like,
is a man, on. Right, Super Bowl or bust. Did you help your team get to the Super Bowl by not addressing an edge rusher? Nah, we're good.
Okay. Personal injury of any sort is personal. Do me a favor. Turn his mic off. He's going to keep talking, and then I'll just do this, and then when we pick it back up, he'll be mid-monologue, crushing.